Well, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Jim Rickards as we're talking about his work, The New Great Depression, Winners and Losers in a Post-Pandemic World. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll be back. We'll chat more with him and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. James Rickards with us. His new book is called The New Great Depression. Jim, are you biblical at all?
Yes, read the Bible many times, and actually all my books start with a biblical quote. So,
okay, good.
Yes.
Book of Revelation, of course. Are we in the midst of some of this stuff where people can neither buy nor sell without the sign of the beast, the mark of the beast?
Well, I think we're getting closer to that. I don't, I can't read the mind of God, so I can't tell you exactly the time or the place, but the trend is in that direction. I think there's a lot of, obviously, wisdom in the Bible that goes almost without saying, but the book of Revelation I've read many times. And the quote that I have at the beginning of my book, The New Great Depression, talks about, you know, the angels pouring out, in effect, the wrath of God, but it comes in different forms, you know, opening seals and hearing trumpets, etc. But I talk about emptying out the plague. And I make the point both because of the prophetic, the book of Revelations is what's called apocalyptic literature, and it doesn't mean, you know, the world comes to a fiery end. It actually just means prophecy. Book of Daniel is apocalyptic in that literary sense. But I make the point that nothing new about plagues, nothing new about pandemics. You know, Athens and Sparta, the Peloponnesian War, Athens was defeated in part because a plague broke out in Athens. The reintegration of the Roman Empire stopped in the 6th century AD because the Emperor Justinian, a plague broke out in Constantinople. So nothing new about plagues or pandemics changing the world.
The World Health Organization is fishing around Wuhan, China, as we speak, and hopefully they'll find a little bit more about the origin because, they've got that lab there, and they're trying to get in there, and they want to investigate.
Well, I cover that in my book in Chapter 1. It appears, it's hard to be definitive, but the weight of evidence is clearly that this escaped from the laboratory, particularly the Wuhan Institute of Virology. There's a famous doctor there. They call her, nickname is the Batwoman of Wuhan, but she basically has been doing these coronavirus experiments where they took the coronavirus from bats, they transfer it animal to animal, they do genetic modification, bioengineering. Now, did they release it on purpose, or did it escape because they're sloppy and negligent? That's hard to say, but even if you give them the benefit of the doubt and say it was by accident, the fact is it was by engineered in that lab, and their handling of it, I would say, is a crime against humanity. So WHO, they're kind of sock puppets. They're kind of just, pawns for the Chinese. Why are you doing the investigation a year later? This should have been done this time last year.
Yep.
There's an American on the delegation. He was handpicked because he's taken money from the Chinese. So there's just a lot there that I don't give it any credibility, but there is good science. There are some whistleblowers. There is good evidence, and I cover this in my book. But I present the wet market theory, the idea of this jump from an animal to a human in the wet market, and I basically say it doesn't stand up. Why did they went into that wet market and they scrubbed it from top to bottom with antiseptic? Well, why would you do that if you weren't trying to, cover something up? And why wouldn't you just leave it so investigators could come in? Meanwhile, scientists have disappeared. Communications channels have been shut down. They'll arrest you if you publish a paper in China that says it came from the lab. All the evidence points in the direction of the laboratory.
It's a disastrous situation for all of us. Yep. I had said back in March it was airborne when the CDC said it was not. Then they changed their mind.
The CDC has flip-flopped. The WHO has flip-flopped. Remember those WHO tweets? They said there's no evidence of human-to-human transition. I'm sorry. People were dropping dead in the streets of Wuhan. They were cremating living people because they were infected. But the WHO says there's no human-to-human transmission. That was nonsense. They've covered up for the Chinese every step of the way. There are other scientists. I applaud Australia. Australia has actually stood up to the Chinese and said, no, we need a real independent investigation, and they are looking at the laboratory. China has retaliated by trashing Australian exports to China. They won't buy any Australian wine, iron, or coal.
Just to punish them that way.
Yeah, Australia is being punished economically we're speaking the truth about this coming from the laboratory. And again, there's a lot of evidence in the book. I never make claims without backing up with testimony, interviews, scientific journals, et cetera. And that's all in the book. But clearly, this came from the laboratory.
What about 4 years of a Joe Biden administration? What's your crystal ball say?
Oh, it's a tough one. I mean, George, some things are true, but they're sad to say it. I'll say it with any delight whatsoever. But, Biden's in a state of cognitive decline. It's not unusual. He's almost 80 years old. He's had two aneurysms. I'm not a doctor, just to be clear. But there are serious problems there. So do we end up with, and there's been all this talk about the 25th Amendment with Trump, fine, but do we end up in a situation a year from now where the 25th Amendment is used
for medical reasons?
And at that point, Kamala Harris would become the acting president. If Biden resigns, she'll become president. But if he's merely sidelined under the 25th Amendment, she becomes the acting president. But she has the powers of the commander in chief. So I wouldn't rule that out.
Do you think Donald Trump lost this election on his own?
He made some big mistakes. He should have won. It was definitely winnable. I do think there's clear evidence of fraud. I don't want to take a deep dive on that. People argue both ways to change the outcome. It's hard to say, but there was clear evidence of fraud. But if you ask me, when did Trump, in effect, lose the election? It was March and April of 2020, at the height of the pandemic. And he was doing these daily press conferences. Now, he did a great job with his task force. Mike Pence, Deborah Birx, I'm not a big Fauci fan. I think he's an over-the-hill bureaucrat. But be that as it may, he had a good team. They got the vaccine done. They got a three-star general on the logistics. Guy's a logistical genius. He did a lot of things right. But one thing he did wrong, he went to those press conferences, and they went on for an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. And it was Trump and these puny little, back-and-forth arguments with the reporters.
About
John Carl.
Yeah.
And he, at a time when Americans were, he should have, he had the FDR moment handed to him on a silver platter. Just think of FDR and the Great Depression, the fireside chats. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Trump had an opportunity to inspire and reassure America. And by not pulling any punches, said, this is bad, and it's going to get worse, but we'll get through it. That was the message. He didn't do that. He got in, pardon my language, but pissing matches with John Carl and Jim Acosta and all these, worthless reporters. And the American people were demoralized. And that's when his ratings went down. Now, he came back at the end with the rallies. That was good. But I think he kind of lost his opportunity during the height of the pandemic when he was the old Trump. He kind of didn't understand the impact. He did a good job in the medical front, but a terrible job in communications.
What do you think of the riots that we had on January 6th? I believe, of course, that some of them, if not lots of them, were Trump supporters. But I also believe that there were Antifa folks planted in there to make it even worse. What do you think?
Well, you're right. That evidence is coming out, and the FBI is, they're doing an extensive identification. I wish they'd done more of that last summer when those riots. But the violence is unacceptable, obviously. But there were teams in there that were in military gear. I'm talking matching fatigues and helmets. They were not our military, but they were a lot of ex-military, and they were like making lines to certain objectives. So they were not just part of a mob. I mean, they were in the mob, but they were very disciplined. A lot of communications. Antifa supporters have been identified as part of the mob. We haven't got to the bottom of it. Of course, there's a rush to judgment. The Democrats have come out with a narrative before anyone investigates the facts. I always say, if you have truth, you don't need a narrative. But there's a narrative, and Trump didn't instigate it. I mean, he said, go up to the Capitol, let your voices be heard, do it peacefully. He didn't say.
Well, he got impeached over it.
Yeah, well, George, they say when you print too much money, you devalue the money. And when you do too many impeachments, you devalue impeachment. I think in the fullness of time, historians will look back and see Nancy Pelosi was, degraded the Constitution and the role of the House of Representatives.
I mean, the guy's just got days left in office. Just let him finish it and get out.
Correct. And she actually did Trump a favor. Because as much as Trump is criticized for the riot, even though he didn't cause it, she makes him look like a victim at the end with the impeachment. So the Democrats, they rarely think two moves ahead. How could Trump end up as a sympathetic figure and a victim after what he went through during the Capitol riot. The answer is leave it to Nancy Pelosi to turn that around. But, you know, Biden's going to be sworn in a few days, and we'll go from there. But I think you're looking at the third term of Obama. If you look at all his cabinet appointees, sub-cabinet officials, they're all recycled Obama people. And this is really kind of gearing up for Michelle 2024.
Interesting. All right, let's go to first-time caller Steve, Bismarck, North Dakota. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for letting me on the show, George. Jim, if my mind was talking, it would be you. We must be about the same age. I enjoyed your story about being a parent, or not a parent, excuse me, a child of a parent who went through the Depression. And so I likewise have many of those same attributes. My question would be for someone, and let's, you know, the world only exists around me, right? But for someone who is in their 60s and now facing retirement and going through some of these things, how, what does the future hold for us? Are we going to see gigantic inflation? We've got this debt that's hanging around our neck, and it's only going to increase, and it's our debt. It's not the nation's debt, really. What do you foresee happening, you know, within the next 10 years?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And just to be clear, I can't give individual financial advice, but I'm happy to talk about markets in broad terms. And
generalities. Yeah.
Generalities. And what we're going to see, and it's very unusual, but we'll probably see some deflation at first, and then the inflation will come later. So the money printing, this sounds strange, but it's backed up by the evidence. Money printing does not cause inflation. You can print $7 trillion, but $7 trillion times zero is zero. The zero is the velocity or the turnover. In other words, it's the lending and spending, the borrowing and going out and buying stuff. That's what can cause inflation. We don't have that right now. We do have the money printing, but we don't have that turnover, as I described, because people are just sticking in the bank. So the question is, what's going to change the behavior? It's not about the Fed. It's about the perception. Do you see inflation coming? Right now, people don't see inflation coming. They see low interest rates, possible deflation. But the government can't have that. The government can't have deflation because you're better off if prices are dropping, but they don't know how to tax it. And also, it increases the real value of debt. It falls back on the banks, and the banks start to go bankrupt. So we're going to have some deflation at first, but the question is, how does the government get inflation? How do they turn that around? And I described this at the end of my book. It was done by FDR in 1933, and it was done by Richard Nixon in 1971. So you have one Democrat, one Republican. FDR did it on purpose. He knew exactly what he was doing. Nixon did it by accident. But in both cases, you have to increase the dollar price of gold. You know, the dollar versus the euro or the yen or pound sterling, who cares? These currencies, they fluctuate. They don't go to the moon. They don't go to zero. They just go back and forth. But gold is the one thing that's not printed by a central bank. So you've got to get the dollar price of gold up. And the reason is not to reward gold holders. It will. If you have gold, you're going to make money. The reason is to get the price of everything else to go up. You know, the world of $5,000 gold is the world of $400 oil, $100 silver, $20 corn, et cetera. That's what FDR did to get out of the Great Depression. So my expectation is deflation at first, maybe for a year, lower interest rates, but then, boom, they're going to get to inflation, but they're going to have to do it with gold.
Do you see a war with China over Taiwan?
Very possibly, very possibly. I've spent a lot of time at the Pentagon, and we, you know, no secret, you know, it's not top secret. We've done those scenarios, and the Chinese do them all the time. And there you're what's called the Thucydides trap, reference to the Greek historian about the war between Athens and Sparta. You know, in the day, Athens was the rising power. Sparta was the established power. So today people say, you know, China's the rising power. The U.S. is the established power. But I remind people that Sparta won that war. So, the danger of that is high and getting higher.
And I'm not sure the American public, even though we have an agreement to defend Taiwan, I'm not sure the American public would stomach a war with China over Taiwan.
Well, they won't. Certainly, they won't stomach it if we start it. But if China invades Taiwan, There's a lot more at stake than Taiwan. You've got Japan, South Korea, Australia, the whole Indo-Pacific region. That's what you're defending, and for that matter, Hawaii. So you're defending the entire structure, not just one island, and that's what it would be about. We're not going to start it, but we probably will defend Taiwan if China starts it. So yeah, you have to go from there. But there is this what's called the Quad. The Quad is an alliance among Japan, Australia, the United States, and India. And if you look at a map, those four countries with the Seventh Fleet surround China and cut off all of its sea lanes. China has no oil.
And what about Britain? They're bringing ships in that area now.
Yeah, Britain's an ally. They're part of what's called the Five Eyes. I think listeners probably know that the UK, Canada, US, Australia, New Zealand, all, you know, kind of former British colonies or dominions, and the UK share intelligence in ways that we don't share with other countries. So that Five Eye alliance is alive and well. Yep, absolutely, they're important.
We've got Gino in St. Louis. Hey, Gino, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing, George? I have two questions for Jim tonight.
All right.
Number one, I'm working from home now, and I have for almost a year. And I look at COVID as being a catalyst for to move trends along. What other trends does Jim see as moving forward quicker because of the COVID virus? Number two question is, the world currency is the U.S. dollar. And that's because the U.S. dollar buys most of the world's oil. And the U.S. keeps it that way on purpose. What would it take to make the U.S. dollar not become the world currency anymore? Thank you.
Well, those are great questions, Gino. On the first one, a trend that has kind of come out of nowhere but absolutely accelerated and is going to continue is exactly what you described, work from home. So what's going on now is fascinating. There is an exodus, and exodus is not too strong a word, out of major cities. And we have the data. Through October, and it's worse since October, but through last October, 1 million people have left New York City. And we know that because when you move, you file a change of address form with the post office. That's publicly available information. 300,000 of those forms were filed, but that's per household. So if you assume three people per household, that's 900,000, almost 1 million people and more since October. And cities are the greatest wealth-generating mechanisms in the history of civilization. Brings together all this talent, artists, writers, bankers, lawyers, dancers, musicians, architects, etc., all in one place, lots of buzz and great culture and all that. When you depopulate cities, you destroy the wealth generation mechanism. That's another reason I say we're in a depression. Now, where are they leaving? They're leaving New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and Chicago, and a few other cities. Where are they going? They're going to Miami, Nashville, Austin, Phoenix, Scottsdale, Boise, Idaho, and a few other cities. So that trend's going to continue. Investment opportunities, residential real estate in the target cities. Nashville is the fastest growing major city in the United States. So that trend is going to continue. It's going to severely damage the economy because we're destroying the wealth generating mechanisms. On your second...
We'll answer that in a second, okay. Jim. We're going to take this break. We'll come back and find out what you think about the world economy and the U.S. dollar. Saddam Hussein wanted to get oil off the U.S. dollar, and look what happened to him. Next hour, Mark Allen Frost joins us as we are talking about the afterlife and channeling, so make sure you're part of Coast to Coast. We'll be back in a moment with Jim Rickards and take final calls with him as well. Welcome back to Coast, back with our final segment with Jim Rickards' book, The New Great Depression. And Jim, the second part of Gino's question was, what would it take to bounce the U.S. off the world economy for the dollar?
Right, and Gino's right. There was a deal worked out by Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, and William Simon in 1974, whereby the Arabs agreed to take dollars for oil and stick them back in the U.S. banks. But we agreed to maintain the value of the dollar. That almost fell apart in the late 70s. Things were so bad during Carter that the United States Treasury, very few people remember this or know it, the United States Treasury borrowed money in Swiss francs. We had Swiss franc treasury bonds because nobody wanted dollars.
Huh.
Paul Volcker came in, raised interest rates to 20%, restored it, and we've had a relatively stable dollar ever since. So that brings us to today. Now, As far as replacing the dollar, you know, my wife hates me to admit this, but I was one of the registered lobbyists around the Washington office, spent a lot of time in Capitol Hill. And what I learned in Washington is you can't beat something with nothing. Like, if you don't like something, you can rant and rave and, you know, do op-eds, but you need something to replace it. So the dollar has problems, but it's not going to be toppled unless there's something to replace it. It's not going to be the Chinese yuan or the Russian ruble or any of those currencies. They don't have the bond markets or the rule of law. They don't have the infrastructure. There's really only one thing that could knock the dollar off its perch, and that's gold. So the thing to watch is something like hyperinflation. If the dollar's relatively stable and if inflation's not bad, the petrodollar deal will continue and the Arabs will continue to take dollars for oil. But if you see something like hyperinflation, they're going to switch to gold. Gold is the only alternative. So if you see the price of gold going up to $10,000 or $15,000 an ounce, which I actually do expect, that could be the end of the petrodollar. But it won't be any other currency.
Let's go to Doc in Petaluma, California. Hey, Doc, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, George, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Jim, somebody calculated that with a stimulus package being $2,000, that basically breaks down to about 30 cents an hour. And then Catherine Austin Fitz last night said something about $21 trillion being missing, and then you just said that they printed up, three or four trillion,
right,
total up to another $7 trillion. So, I mean, with all these trillions, how much is the dollar going to be worth?
Well, the key to the dollar, yeah, the $2,000 is going to go out the door, and you're right, the Fed has printed $4 trillion in the past year. But I don't call it stimulus. It's not going to stimulate anything, as we said earlier. People are going to get the money, but they're going to save it or pay down debt. They're not going to spend it. So the thing that's going to cause the inflation and cause people to lose confidence in the dollar, it's not these checks going out the door. It's going to be some change in perception. People are going to have to fear inflation. And right now they don't. They don't see it coming. So it's not about the money or the money printing or the checks. It's about inflation expectations. And right now there aren't any. Something's going to have to change.
Absolutely. Well, let's go next to Christian in San Pedro, California. Christian, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Called you last night. Remember, I talked to Austin from San Pedro.
Yes, that's right.
Like I said, I've been listening to your show since 2004. I just wanted to add a comment and a question. That is, you know, I remember in March, it was a Monday, and I was getting my taxes done, and the governor, in conjunction with Mayor Garcetti, ordered all gyms, because I work in a gym, I don't want to say where, but I work in a gym in Long Beach, and we shut down that Monday afternoon, the lockdown started, and I can remember when my manager was shutting the door, and, you know, we were leaving, you know, the gym. I thought, oh, well, you know, look, this is just going to last 4 or 5 weeks. You're going to get a little bit of a vacation, then we'll be back. Coronavirus is going to go past us like a ship in the night, and we'll go back to the way the world is. We just put everything on pause. You know, 10 months into this now, and I think that, you know, God knows how long, because the way things are, cases are much higher now in L.A. County, because I live in Los Angeles, than they were when all this started. I see that just the lockdown continuing all the way through winter, spring. Part of my question is, when do you see us going into, it's kind of like the day after a nuclear explosion, where we can go outside and we won't have to wear a mask anymore, we won't have to social distance, we can actually walk inside and dine in a fine restaurant? I don't see that happening for 2 years. So I'll take my answer on the air, but, you know, I just... Look, my advice to not only you, but all the coast-to-coast listeners out there is, look, I've gone through depression. I've gone through anger management. It doesn't do any good. Try to hang in there, hang tight. Find ways to occupy yourself. This is an opportunity now, especially if you're at home and you don't have anything to do. This is an opportunity for you to start reading. You know, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, just, you know, read some books, read some classics.
And keep listening to the radio shows. That's the name of the game. Jim, what do you think? Christian's got some points.
Yep, thanks, Christian. There's a lot to unpack there, but let's kind of break it down a little bit. So the pandemic side of it, I think 2022, maybe the middle of 2022, that's the earliest when we'll kind of be able to, okay, we'll have herd immunity, maybe the vaccines will work, the virus will stop mutating, That's the earliest I see people being able to kind of go outside and not worry too much about it. Maybe we're not all wearing masks. So I would say, I think you're right. It'll continue. It'll be bad for the rest of this year, maybe early to mid-2022 at the earliest. The lockdown is a separate issue. As I explained earlier, lockdowns don't work. They do them anyway because politicians have to put on a show, but they don't work. So Amazon's not locked down. Apple's not locked down. You know, Costco, Home Depot are not locked down. But gyms, bars, restaurants, nail salons, a lot of small businesses are. That's half the economy. You cannot lock down half the economy
and
not expect a recession. But the point is, it doesn't work. It doesn't stop the virus. If lockdowns worked, why is the virus 10 times worse?
Well, and here's my biggest concern, Jim. It's not whether you wear a mask or not. It's not whether you get vaccinated or not. All this started from one person in Wuhan, China.
Right.
One person. So if they eradicate COVID-19 for 99.99999% of the world's population, you've still got that one person out there who might have it. Won't this start all over again?
It could very well, George, and that is the history of pandemics. And also, just this virus could mutate. Actually, we have a new mutation or variant, if you want to call it that, today from England and South Africa.
Right, and we've got it here.
Correct. It's more contagious. And a lot of people say, well, the fatality rate's not higher. The heck with the rate. The fatalities are up, and if more people get it, more people die, period. If the percentage rate isn't higher, who cares? People are dying, and this is much worse. So does it mutate around the vaccine? So that there's actually a name for it. It's called mutation escape. The virus just is trying to keep going. So if the antibodies are there, it can mutate in such a way that the antibodies don't work. That happened in the Spanish flu. It happened in the Asian flu of 1957. It could happen again. So that's the worst case. So this thing just doesn't go away, and we have it for years, and it gets worse. So that you cannot rule that out.
Are we going to get real data that would show us, of all the people who get vaccinated, how many come down with COVID, and how many people who are not vaccinated come down with COVID? Will we get those kinds of numbers?
We should. I don't know if we will, but we should. But that's a really important thing, because if you get the vaccination and you get the antibodies against this version of COVID, but there's a mutation, you could get sick again because you don't have the new antibodies. And if you start to see that, vaccinated people getting COVID later this year, that will tell you that the virus has mutated. The mutation escape has worked.
And they got to work on another one.
Correct.
Let's go to Shelbyville, Indiana. Bob's with us. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Hey, George.
Robert, good to have you.
Hey, thank you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a couple comments. But we've been in debt since this country started in I think we've been in debt since 1812. And it's grown to $27 trillion. Now, how in the hell are we going to pay this off?
We're never going to be able to pay this off, Jim, ever.
Well, that's correct, but we don't have to, and this is not well understood. By the way, the United States was in debt before we were the United States, because the first thing George Washington and Alexander Hamilton took on the Revolutionary War debt before we were even the United States of America. So we've been in debt. However, one president, Andrew Jackson, in 1837, did pay off the national debt. When Andrew Jackson left, there was no national debt, but it's been going up ever since. So Bob's right about that. But here's the key. You don't have to pay it off, but you do have to roll it over, meaning when the old debt comes due, you issue new debt, pay off the old debt, and then you got to deal with the new debt. And that was Alexander Hamilton's.
But you really never pay it down, though.
You never pay it down, but you have to be able to roll it over. And the question is, when do you hit that wall? When people lose confidence in the dollar, they lose confidence in the credit of the United States, that's when you can't roll it over. That's when interest rates spike, and you basically can't refinance debt.
Sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
Well, it is a Ponzi scheme, but it's so far so good. But I'm not making light of it, George. I'm just saying people say you can't pay it off. You don't have to pay it off, but you do have to roll it over, be able to borrow new. And when you lose your borrowing ability, then you can't pay off the old debt. Then you default. That's the thing to watch for.
Let's go to John in Wilsonville, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hey, John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, George. I just want to say that when I was a young boy, I used to sit and listen to my grandfather and my dad talk about the Depression. After saying that, I'm going to make a prediction here.
Okay.
The Dow is right now at 30,000. I predict at the end of the year from now, the Dow will be between 10 and 12,000. Gasoline will be between $7 and $8, and unemployment will be around 52%. The virus but the real virus is in Washington, D.C. with all this spending. This stimulus does not help. The government stimulus does not help anything. It doesn't stimulate anything. But we can't be $29 trillion, which will be with this new stimulus, and not expect to have a default.
$8 a gallon oil, what do you think about that?
Well, here's the thing, George. I do expect the Dow to come back down. Now, it could go up for a while. I'm not saying go out and short it. You know, I don't want to stand in front of an 18.
Will it get as low as 10,000 as
it could.
John predicts?
If this gets worse, that could happen. Unemployment is going up. It's actually going up right now. So this thing is going to get worse before it gets better. I don't have to lock into the specific numbers John's mentioning, but if the idea is the depression is going to continue, the Dow is going to come down to earth, unemployment's going to go up. I agree with all of those. So that they're not tomorrow, not next month necessarily, but you know, the end of the year, early next year, that's a fairly good forecast.
Interesting take. Roxanne in College Station, Texas, first time caller. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi there. I appreciate you taking my call.
And thank you.
We're trying to get a lot in, and thank you so much. I did have a question about the American dollar, and Jim answered that. But I was wondering, with all this debt and all this money pouring out, is there any chance of the government possibly trying to confiscate our bank accounts and the dollars that we do have? Or is that just more of a conspiracy theory?
What do you think of that, Jim? Is that a possibility?
It is, but here's how they'll do it. They're not going to just reach in and take your money away. Well, actually, they could. They're trying to do negative interest rates. So the way it would work is, first of all, they got to get people, they got to eliminate cash. Because let's say they put negative interest rates on your bank account.
What's a negative interest rate?
Well, so you put $100,000 in the bank and 1% interest, you come back a year later.
How about you put $1,000 in the bank?
Okay, fair enough. You put $1,000 in the bank, 1% interest, you come back, you got $1,010. But what if you put $1,000 in the bank, you come back a year later, and you got
$900.
That's a negative interest rate. With
I see. It sucks it down.
Correct. But to do that, you have to get rid of cash. Because if you're going to do that, I'll just say, fine, I'll go to the bank, get my cash, put it in a safe place, and now I still have my $1,000. You can't take it away.
Well, no, if you go to get your cash and it's only got $900 in your bank account instead of the $1,000 you put in, they're only going to give you $900 back.
Well, that's correct, but you have to do it before the negative interest.
Before it hits, okay.
Right, so step one, eliminate cash. Step two, put on negative interest rates, and then they'll start to take away your money. So watch cash. When you see them trying to get rid of cash, and they are, that movement is already underway. That's the signal that the negative rates are coming.
And they're already putting restrictions on how much cash you can take, travel with, and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by the way, go down to the bank and take $10,000 out. They'll send a report, and this is required by law, Currency Transaction Report, CTR, to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. They'll stick in a file right next to Osama bin Laden. I mean, that's the law today.
And it's your money.
It's your money. It's legal. You can do it. But if you do it, they're going to report you to the Financial Crimes Enforcement.
What do they think you're doing?
They don't care. They think you're a tax evader, a drug dealer, a terrorist. It's your money. You just want your money. Everyone says, I could go down to the bank and get my money whenever I want. Well, maybe. But by the way, if you go up to a typical bank teller and say, give me $10,000 or $50,000, they'll tell you to come back.
Oh, they don't have the cash.
Correct. You need to make an appointment, come back in a few days, and when you do, they'll give you the money, but they'll send this report to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is in Northern Virginia, part of the U.S. government.
Well, let's listen to this scheme. Casinos in Vegas, people in most of them, you're not reputable, would take, let's say, $100,000 in cash to Las Vegas, put it on their account, and then get a check back when they leave, so then it's washed. So they would bring dirty money into Vegas, put it in the casinos. The casinos would give them a clean check, and they'd have a clean check for $100,000.
That's correct, and that's how people get money out of China illegally through the Macau casinos. So casinos are major money laundering operations. It's absolutely true. There are a lot of ways to do it. I mean, I used to be I was global international tax counsel for Citibank. I spent all day, all night working on tax schemes around the world. Legal, I must say, but there are a lot of ways to do it.
Jim, thank you for being on the program. We think the world of you. Come on back anytime, okay?
Thanks, George.
Jim Rickards' website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His new book is called The New Great Depression. Up next, The Spirit World on Coast to Coast.